This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and all across America. I'm your host, Jay Schell. Today we are interviewing the superintendent of Voyageurs National Park, Bob DeGrosse, way up north in Minnesota at the border with Canada. Bob is a graduate of Fox Valley College, where he studied forestry and natural resource management. In 1989, he got his first job with the National Park Service, and over his career, he's worked in Mammoth Caves, Everglades down in Florida, and came to Voyageurs in 2016. So welcome, Bob. It's great to be talking with you, and hope you're not freezing yet up there in northern Minnesota.
No, not yet. Thank you very much for contacting me. And it's the tail end of our summer right now, but there have been some fall-like conditions. It's interesting. I know about 5 hours to the south of us in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, they're having extreme heat conditions up right in the 90s, and up here our high has been today and yesterday in the 60s, actually.
So wow.
Interesting, yeah.
So you've been there since 2016. Did you apply for the position at Voyageurs, or what attracted you to Voyageurs National Park?
Yeah, prior to coming up here, I was in South Florida for 23 years, and I was the chief of the last position in South Florida I had before coming here. I was the chief of interpretation at Big Cypress National Preserve, and then this superintendency opportunity at Voyageurs National Park came open. And yeah, I applied for the position and was able to compete for it and was offered the position. The main interest that I have, I'm originally from West Central Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
So I'm from the northern Midwestern area. And I've always had a deep connection to the northern parks, even though I didn't work in them. I grew up reading Aldo Leopold and Sigurd Olsen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always really had an interest in at some point, getting to someplace like Pictured Rocks or Isle Royal, Apostle Islands,
mm-hmm.
or Voyageurs. So when I saw this position open, I was very excited, and I was pleased that I competed well for it.
So you were already familiar with Gold Country after living in Florida?
I was, yeah. Being from West Central Wisconsin,
uh-huh.
growing up here in the upper Midwest, I was familiar with it, and I'm surprised how quickly I reacclimated to it, actually.
Oh, yeah. Very great. So what's the primary mission of the ranger staff at Voyageurs?
Well, the primary purpose of the park is to protect a view shed similar to that the Voyageurs would have experienced as they traveled through this area in the late 1600s, 1700s, and into the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
As they traveled along the water highways of the lakes and streams of northeastern Minnesota and northwestern Ontario, using a lot of the knowledge that was imparted to them by the Ojibwe and Cree and eventually the Métis in the area to seek the furs of whatever fur-bearing animals, primarily beavers, though.
Mm-hmm.
So the primary mission is to really maintain that view shed of the waterways and woods of northeastern Minnesota and northwestern Ontario. But, of course, here on the northeastern Minnesota side.
Yeah. How large a staff do you have?
The staff here, we have about 45 permanent staff at
really?
The park.
Wow.
And our seasonal staff pretty much doubles that. We bring in an additional 45 to 50 seasonals, interns and volunteers. The park is 218,000 acres, 40% of which is water. And it is truly a park where to really get the experience, it's important to try to get out onto the water. We do have large lakes here. Matter of fact, the four large lakes that we have are Rainy, Cabtogama, Namekin, and Sandpoint Lakes. And so those lakes are large enough to where power boats are used quite regularly and are a good tool. But we also have paddle access too, and a lot of people come up to canoe and kayak the waters as well.
Yeah, that's what I think of as voyagers, people carrying their canoes, portaging from lake to lake.
Yeah, and just to the east of us, as a matter of fact, our eastern boundary is the western boundary of the Boundary Water Canoe Area Wilderness within the Superior National Forest to the east of us. And those are much smaller lakes that are easier to paddle across. But as you come down the watershed, of course, the lakes become larger. And so though it's possible to canoe the lakes and waters of voyagers, it's challenging because of the size of the lakes.
And does your staff actively patrol the entire park area?
Yeah, and our staff is broken up or made up of five different function areas. Of course, we have the business administrative side, and then we have the law enforcement program, which their main focus is to protect visitors and protect resources. They also have the fire management team in their function. And then we have natural and cultural resources, education and interpretation, and then our facilities, which is taking care of roads and trails and buildings and utilities. And so, yeah, there's always park staff during the weekdays, especially traveling through the waters of the park to go out and accomplish whatever tasks they're focused on for the day. Yeah.
Do you have stations elsewhere in the park other than right at Indianapolis Falls?
Yeah, so we have four gateway communities to the park. International Falls, which is in the northwest end of the park. And then we also have Cabtogama and Ash River and Crane Lake. Those are the four gateways to the park, and each of them is a small resort community. International Falls being the largest, which is about 6,000 to 7,000 people. Cabtogama, Ash River, and Crane Lake are smaller communities, but truly resort communities. Many more amenities available during the summer months, but they also have some resorts that are open in the winter months as well for people who like coming up. We do have snowmobiling in the park, cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, and winter camping opportunities. Yeah.
Are any indigenous people or tribes involved in park activities?
Well, we have 16 affiliated nations on the U.S. side that are closely associated to the lands and waters of Voyageurs National Park. The primary affiliated nation that we work with is the Boyce Fort Band of Ojibwe in Minnesota, and they're the closest geographically. We also have about five First Nations on the Canadian side that are very closely associated to the waters and lands of the park as well. So we do work with them very closely, do consultation, discuss with them the different projects that are taking place. We've not yet entered into shared stewardship agreements with any of those nations, but we have been having conversations. And of course, the Boyce Fort Band, being the most closely geographically located, are the primary nation that we have those discussions with.
And what do those indigenous tribes, what's their activity? Do they fish the lakes, or they do guided trips, or what?
Again, they're a little bit further to the south of us, so they do a lot of activities on other lakes in northeastern Minnesota. And of course, some of the tribal members also come to the lakes at Voyageurs National Park. One of the biggest, most culturally significant connections to the waters of northeastern Minnesota is the collection of Monoman or wild rice, which is so culturally significant to the Ojibwe in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, they originated from eastern portions of North America and eventually traveled the waters to get to northeastern Minnesota, northern Wisconsin, Michigan, and northwest Ontario. And as they were doing that, their culture, the stories were that they should stop where the food grows on the water or the wild rice is prevalent, like in northeastern Minnesota. They also fish. They do fishing, and then not in the park because hunting isn't done in the park, but in other areas closely associated to the park, they do hunt, yes.
So the international border runs down the center of the lakes. What kind of problems does that create?
So yeah, about our northern border of the park is basically the international border between the United States and Canada, and so we it extends for about a 70-mile distance from the northwestern end of the park to the southeastern end of the park. There's not a lot of problems that are created with that. Of course, Customs and Border Patrol is active in the area because it is an international border, and they deal mostly with those types of the laws and regulations associated with border crossings and things like that. It is unique in the fact that the border here is such a watery border that many people are crossing the lakes in different areas. Now, for safe boating, it is okay to cross that border with no problems at all, as long as you don't go across that border and touch land in any manner. So many of the fishermen here do what we call looping, where they might start off in the American waters, and then they might go up into the Canadian waters, and as long as they're following Canadian fishing regulations, can fish. And as long as they do not touch land in any manner, they can come back into the United States waters without having to register with Canadian Customs and register back with American Customs.
Is there a problem of illegal crossing?
No, not in this area, and that's, I think, I'm sure there's some, but it's not prevalent, and part of it is because of the fact that it is such a watery border, and any type of crossing would require a boat and everything like that. So
are the majority of the visitors people who come up to camp and canoe on the lakes?
Yeah, so our visitation is estimated to be about 260,000 people a year. So we are one of the less visited parks, and I think that might be because of the requirement for water access. I would say a good amount of our visitation are people who are coming up and specifically wanting to go camping and have overnight experiences out in the park, or maybe they're staying at a resort at one of the gateway communities and they're coming up to explore and go fishing and things like that. And then another portion of our visitation, and it's hard to guess numbers right off the top of my head here, but a number of visitors are coming up and are just wanting to get the experience of voyagers, but maybe they're not as prepared because they don't have their own boat. And so they go out on one of our tour boat opportunities that we have, either with our commercial operators that operate in the park, or the Park Service also operates larger tour boats. And so that gives people who don't have a boat the opportunity to get out away from the shoreline and see what Voyagers is like from the water.
Is fishing a main attraction?
Fishing is the main attraction here. Yeah, and most of the species, or the most sought-after species, is walleye, northern pike, certain times of year crappie, and then smallmouth bass is popular as well.
So what other kinds of wildlife are found in the park?
One of the unique things about Voyagers National Park, from my perspective, is that we are the only national park area in the continental United States that we did not reintroduce wolves here. We've always had a strong population of wolves in northeastern Minnesota and everything. And so wolves are one of our top keystone species. We also have moose and bear, fisher, marten, lynx, and then we are eagle nirvana, basically, just because of the waters of the park. Eagles are just really drawn to this area and everything.
And you have beaver. Are there beaver dams or structures that are...
Yeah, beaver. Beaver are a very large keystone species as well. And, of course, a species that is tied to the entire story of the park, basically, with the fact that the park was established to maintain the viewshed of what the voyagers would have seen, both the French voyagers and the English voyagers, and eventually what became the American voyagers, as they traveled through the area seeking pelts. And again, the primary pelt was the beaver pelt. Beavers have a great impact on the area. Matter of fact, one of the things that we're finding is that the engineering of beavers by damming up streams and things like that, and eventually creating small ponds that maybe they'll abandon that will eventually become immersive wetlands. They're a big control in trying to staving off wildfires, actually.
Are any of those species problematic, or are any in decline? Are the populations stable?
Thankfully, our moose population here at the park is stable, but region-wide around the park, the moose population is in decline, and that's one of the populations that we're watching very closely. Matter of fact, we're working very closely with the U.S. Forest Service, the Minnesota DNR, and the Grand Portage, Fond du Lac, and Boys Fort bands of Ojibwe to really look and see what is going on with the moose population and how is it going to be impacted in the future, especially with changes due to climate change and things like that. So moose is one that we're very interested in. Lynx, of course, is another northern boreal species that we've seen the populations start to decline. And then bats. We're on the very northern edge. A lot of the range for species like the long-eared bats. And as we know, bats are greatly impacted because of white nose syndrome and things like that. So unfortunately, we're seeing different species decline with bats and things. So,
moose swim from island to island, don't they?
They do, yeah. And then, of course, a lot of their movement is during the wintertime when the lakes are frozen and everything. As a matter of fact, one of the more unique opportunities here is to go out on the frozen lake surfaces during the depths of the winter in like January and February. And I think one of the neatest opportunities is maybe to come along as you're either cross-country skiing, snowmobiling, or snowshoeing, and maybe come across a wolf kill on the frozen lake surface.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're out around dusk and into the night, maybe hear wolves calling in the distance.
So the wolf population is stable. What's the wolf interaction with other animals?
The wolf population here in northeastern Minnesota is stable and actually increasing some. And obviously they're a top predator, so they do have an impact on some of our different grazing animals or browsing animals like deer and moose and different things like that. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things is that we've seen that the wolves actually, we have footage because of different research projects that are taking place, that the wolves during different times of the year will actually fish and take suckers that are coming up small streams that are spawning. And during the wintertime have actually evolved to really depend upon beaver as they're popping up out of breathing holes or near breathing holes in frozen over beaver ponds and things. So,
do you have any idea what the population numbers are for wolves?
I don't know the number right off the top of my head, but I do know that typically we have about 6 to 7 packs that are associated with the lands of the park. And those packs usually tend to be about 4 to 6 individuals in a pack and everything.
Are these wolves considered a subspecies, or are they genetically identical to wolves that you find in the Rocky Mountains?
They are considered to be the gray wolf or the timber wolf. I don't know that they're considered to be a subspecies of the larger wolf population, but I do know that because of the disconnection between the different populations that are found in the upper Midwest and the Rockies and different things like that, historically those populations would have probably intermingled along the edges, and now that's not possible because of the lack of population between the upper Midwest and the Rockies and things. You know, there's that gap in the northern Dakotas, or the Dakotas, I should say, and things like that.
And then there are red squirrels in the park. I think you feature them on your website. Talk about the red squirrels.
Oh, yeah. When you're out camping, you definitely get a lot of interaction with the squirrels and things like that. Just the dense northern boreal forest is definitely something or a habitat that they thrive in and things. So definitely see them quite often.
Are you dealing with climate change there?
Yeah. Last year, we saw, in my opinion, the direct effects of climate change and the fact that we saw the worst flood ever recorded on the waters here in the park. The previous worst flood was in the 1950s, and we exceeded the level of that flood and everything. So I know one of the things that I'm very interested in is, you know, with the climatic changes that we're seeing, are we going to see floods and severe floods more frequently? And then it's interesting, I was waking up this morning thinking of our interview, and I was thinking back, you know, the last 4 years we have not seen a normal climatic cycle here at the park. This year we are seeing drought conditions. Last year we saw severe flood conditions. And then prior to that flood year, we saw 2 years of severe drought conditions again. Another thing related to climate change that I'm always interested in is, are we going to see the typical winter freeze cycles that we have? You know, a lot of the resorts here really depend upon ice fishing and things like that.
Uh-huh.
Well, if we don't see the typical freeze cycles and we don't have the decent ice cover that we tend to see, how is that going to impact access and also travel of wildlife and things? So,
I assume the flooding is a result of heavy rains that occur and then you experience drought.
Last year, it was a trifecta and just a perfect storm. What happened, in my opinion, was we had a very deep freeze and a decent snow cover, and the cold really persisted into April. And then what happened is, on top of that, frozen ground with some decent snow cover in April and May, actually March, April, and May, we saw extreme rain events. Matter of fact, in that time period that we typically, I believe, see about 5 inches of rain, I think we saw close to 15 inches of rain.
Wow.
So you had all that rain on top of the frozen ground, melting the snow on top of that, and that water had nowhere to go except for rushing in to the lakes and rivers and streams that make up the Rainy River watershed.
So did you say you're currently in drought, or do you just periodically experience drought?
We were early on in the year seeing drought conditions, and now here since about early August, late July, we finally have moved out of that for our area where we're at. Mm-hmm.
So I gather then fire is not a particular concern, or when you have drought periods, is it a concern?
It is a concern, and thankfully this year, even with the drought conditions that we've seen, we only had 2 lightning strikes. Unfortunately, we are not able to let those naturally started fires burn, because what we're finding is the time that we would typically burn is the time when the rest of the country is in severity, and to minimize the stress on the availability of staffing, we have been, over the last few years, been doing initial attack to put those fires out rather than letting them burn, because there's just not enough firefighters available to bring here and to also focus on the extreme fires that are happening out west.
Mm-hmm. So have you noticed any effects of climate change on wildlife?
I think that it's primarily one of the big things, and this is, of course, many years down the road, is that eventually this area, if climate change continues, which we all anticipate that it likely will, unless there's some major changes that take place, and that we may have even passed that tipping point. But eventually, this boreal forest that the park is made up of will be changing, and the vegetation types will be changing. And when those vegetation types change, will that cause northern species that depend upon the boreal forest, such as moose and lynx, fishers and martens, to move further away from the area because the habitat will change and things? So
is there anything you can do to mitigate the climate change, or do you just have to adapt as it changes?
I think the easiest opportunity for us to try to assure that we mitigate for it and that we are resilient and sustainable is more looking at what is taking place with the drought and flood cycles and things like that. You know, is there resiliency that we can build into the area, recognizing that those floods might be more frequent and things? In terms of the natural world and things, I think we just really have to keep an eye on the populations and how things might be changing in response to climate change and things. So,
are there any research projects that are being done in the park?
Yeah, we have a variety of different research projects being done in the park. One of the main things that we do is we really watch effects of water changes. One of the unique things about Voyagers is that the waters in the park are controlled by three dams, one that's located in International Falls and two others that are located at a remote area called Kettle Falls. And so we watch very closely the impacts to a variety of different things, such as archaeological sites, wild rice stands, fish populations, erosion along shorelines and things like that, as it relates to the management of these waters and things. So that's one of the research projects that we do. We also do a lot of research in relation to water quality indices because we are outstanding waters within the state of Minnesota. So we want to assure that our waters stay pristine in that manner. And then for wildlife, we have research related to wolves, moose, beaver, loons, and I'm trying to think of the others. Wolf, beaver, loons, moose. And those are the primary ones there, yeah.
Is there a university that specializes in doing research in the park?
We primarily work with the University of Minnesota, who has been doing a lot of work related to the wolves in the area. And then we also work with University of Nebraska, which the name of which I forget, but they've been helping us quite a bit with a wetland restoration project that we have been doing for the last 5 or 6 years in the park. And that's a project where we are going in and eradicating invasive hybridized cattails and allowing the area to regenerate with the natural emergent vegetation that is much more diverse than just the monoculture of the hybridized cattail.
Well, Bob, we're just about out of time, but I'd like to bring my canoe up there and do some voyaging in Voyagers.
Oh, definitely.
Thanks, Rick.
Yeah, and I was just speaking to your son-in-law, Rich, and one of the things I mentioned to him is if you do get the opportunity to come to Voyagers National Park, I might be biased in this, but I believe that we have the best campsites in all of the National Park Service.
Awesome.
So if you come up, hopefully you have the opportunity to do an overnight stay at one of our campsites.
Oh, that sounds great. Okay. Well, thanks again very much. Our guest today has been Bob DeGrosse, Superintendent of Voyagers National Park up in northern Minnesota. This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to js-wilderness.com and see additional features of our website. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Jay Schell.